the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. There's always that one dog, isn't there? All of us dog lovers or animal lovers at some point have had one animal that made a lasting impact on our lives. Maybe they sparked a love we didn't know we could have for an animal, or a passion for something we had not discovered in ourselves. Or maybe they ignited a fire inside us that was the beginning of a journey we could not say no to. Canine companions in particular are our teachers, confidants, and support systems in many ways. They truly don't ask for much in return. I think the one thing they would want most in return, if they could speak, is that we, the human species, teach each other to treat all of them with love and respect and to protect them and love them all the days of their life. My guest on the podcast today can definitely relate to having that one dog that changed the trajectory of her life and in a most positive way. That dog was Roosevelt. Rue for short. We are going to find out more about a very unique nonprofit organization with an incredibly heartfelt message. It is my absolute pleasure to have the founder of Live Like Rue Foundation, Sarah Lauk, as my guest on the podcast on this episode. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Sarah.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Jackie. I really appreciate it. I'm excited for this. I haven't been on a podcast in a while, so thank you.
Oh, good. Yay. Let's talk all about Live Like Rue Foundation. And for my listeners, I always like to start our conversations letting them know how I have found out about my guest or the foundation. And I will tell you that I remember posts of when Rue was first rescued and the posts that were first shared about him on Instagram. So I was very moved. I love the story. I remember tennis balls, and I knew that he loved them. So when I saw that the foundation was started, I was very excited. And I know that it's his legacy, per se. So tell us all about how he was saved, where, and why then you decided, I must start Live Like Rue Foundation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the story is pretty incredible. And I'm so happy and honored that so many people latched onto it, because the amount of animals that we've been able to help and sometimes save is remarkable. So Rue came, he was actually Cisco at Chicago Animal Care and Control. And we went looking for a foster with my friend Kelly. We had decided that we were going to maybe co-foster a dog, or at least look for a foster for me or Kelly. And, you know, it was really crowded at that point. The dog flu was in the shelter. So any dog that we were going to pull was going to have to be isolated from our animals for a bit. So knowing that you're picking kind of this gem that gets to leave the shelter, it's a lot of pressure and stress, but it had to be right too. So, you know, you go down the aisles and a lot of dogs are barking and at the cage. And there was this dog named Cisco that was just laying in his cage calmly. So for some reason, he struck us as the dog we wanted to bring outside. We brought him out and he actually ended up urinating for a good 4 or 5 minutes, like nonstop. And it was,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was trickling out slowly. So we knew something was wrong. So with the help of One Tail at a Time Rescue here in Chicago, we were able to get him out about 3 days later, I think it was, by the time we had a vet lined up. It was really hard at that time to find a vet that could isolate a dog from other dogs with this flu in the shelter system. So, you know, we had to have a lot of plans in place and a lot of people to help out and donations and all that. So we got him out, you know, we got him into a vet. We got him isolated. We got him healthy after about, I think it was 4 weeks, actually, he was in isolation where we felt comfortable bringing him into our house, you know, and with our animals. So, and we still did end up isolating him just a bit to be sure he was okay. And he went in. So there was a lot of things wrong with him. His teeth were almost down to the nerve. So, you know, we knew he needed to have those removed. And when they removed the teeth, they actually found the cancer, bone cancer in his groin area. So I was driving to work, yeah, at that point, and I had to pull over. I was so upset. You know, you get this dog, you save their life once, and then, you know, obviously we knew something was wrong. We thought maybe he would just need a neuter and it could figure itself out. But like knowing it was cancer and it was pretty terminal was just, it was really hard.
How old was he, do they say, at the time? Did they tell you roughly?
Yeah, he was 5. So because he was also surrendered by his owner, I should have noted that. So he was surrendered by his owner in pretty poor condition. So we did have like some history on him. And the reason that he was surrendered was, you know, he couldn't urinate, right? And now there's some programs in place at Animal Control where we would actually help that owner, you know, with that problem. Instead of having them surrender, we would try to help them keep their dog, which something like that, you know, we couldn't have helped him much, but we could have given him the resources at least to help. So,
Right.
yeah, so he was 5, and you know, we kind of decided not to do chemo and not to try to treat it because it was terminal, and we knew it would take a lot out of him, you know, in accordance basically with our vet team. So we made a bucket list, and I think, you know, it was kind of like an internal bucket list at first, but people got so attached to him and his story, I think, through 50. And 50, the two-legged pit bull, I should say.
Oh, yes, we were big fans of his.
Yes.
Yes. For any of our listeners who don't know about 50, the two-legged pit bull, he was an ambassador of friendship, of love, of advocacy, and you must look him up because you will absolutely fall in love too.
Yeah, his story too is pretty remarkable. Shot, you know, by the police and somehow was able to live many years with only 2 legs. Incredible story. And you know, it's no wonder he had so many followers and had so many followers at the time. So yeah, so the bucket list picked up steam. People were giving us advice. People bought us a hotel room at the Waldorf. So they usually only allow dogs under 10 pounds. Rue came in, peed all over a fancy Waldorf Astoria couch, and the rest is history. But the staff was so nice to us. I mean, not the type of, you know, hotel, pretentious hotel you would think. They got him ice cream. They gave us like the biggest suite in the place. You know, somebody obviously paid for all that, and we were so thankful. But yeah, his story picked up in the media. A lot of local Chicago media picked up on it, the Chicago Tribune, and then the Dodo latched on, and some other people, like bigger market news agencies, kind of latched onto it, national agencies. And it was nice to get that. But again, we were kind of focused on just trying to give him the best life.
Was he actively in pain, or could he enjoy these things in a mellow, comfortable way? What kind of a, you know, a symptoms did he have?
Yeah, so he, until the end, you know, when I kind of, we just knew, you could tell like it was bad. And you know, that's probably the number one question I get, like, how do you know when it's time? And I've actually done a podcast on that and talked to people, and I'm not a professional. It's only like, but it is odd how I get that question, because I think I've fostered a lot of senior dogs, and you know, obviously went through this with Rue, who was young and sick. And it's hard, you know, when a dog is not old and sick, to say, okay, I'm gonna play God now and say, okay, it's his time. But yeah, he was totally, I mean, we would go on boat rides and walk him a lot, and he was totally fine until the end. The vet told us kind of like what to watch for, and it's a lot of things that I've learned, you know, in the past 6 years too. But no, yeah, if he was ever tired or in pain, you know, he didn't show it. And we did not try to overdo it. You know, we tried to, you know, be cognizant that he might not be telling us that he's in pain either. So yeah, that was kind of the key. And then, you know, as people followed the bucket list, the story got a little bit bigger as we got closer to the end. And, you know, it was really hard for me near the end to tell people that he was gone, you know, just making that decision. But he was, you know, barely able to urinate. You know, it was really dripping out, and like slowly. And he just went to the corner of my yard, and he wouldn't engage me. And once I knew that Rue wouldn't engage a human because he loved people, I was like, okay, it's time. And he stopped eating, and you know, the things the vet tells you: stopped eating, you know, had issues urinating, going to the bathroom. So, you know, I remember On the way home, I was like, I'm going to give this a few days and just, break the news to people. When we were driving home, I said to give it a few days. And then I ended up posting that night because, you're so filled with that emotion and the stress of how am I going to tell all of these people following this story? So we ended up, I think, posting that night. It might have been early the next day. And the outpouring was just incredible, as Jackie. It was just amazing.
Yeah, it was. I saw it and I remember, and it gets you. And I never met him, but you feel like you know these dogs. You become so close to the story. Maybe it moves something in us or makes us think about what can I do? How can I help another, living being close to me? I think that they do so much without saying anything and being themselves is it's quite inspiring. So you started the foundation after Rue passed, is that right?
Yeah, so, and that kind of goes just from the point that you said. So the hashtag and the name Live Like Rue, somebody when I was posting the adventures like hashtagged Live Like Rue, and I was like, wait, that's
Oh.
amazing. That's actually perfect. So we had
Yes.
the hashtag and the name kind of, and I minus the foundation, but we had started to use that hashtag for every adventure he did, and it just like clicked. So yeah, after he passed away, I started to send cancer care packages of everything that he loved. So a blanket, a tennis ball, toys, a McDonald's gift card, and treats basically to people with, again, using my own money just to see, basically just so people could feel that love. Like, and I knew how upset they were that their animal's going through cancer. And it was really just people, because we had started a Facebook page. I didn't really want to do that, but we decided because so many people were hanging on to him to instead of posting it on our personal pages to kind of update on the Facebook page. So, people would start to feel comfortable writing their own stories on our page or messaging me. So I would send the care packages again under kind of my own funding. And then it started to get too big for me to even do. And I didn't want
Right.
to ask people for donations. To me personally, I felt like that wasn't right, even though I know people would have had no problem with it. So I started to look up, how do you start a 501c3? And it's very overwhelming. It
Yeah.
took me a lot of money in
Yes.
the beginning to start it. And I tell people, a lot of people, this: if I had to go back, I don't know if I would have done it. And I know that sounds awful, but the amount, and because I think I've learned so much in 6 years, but the amount of things that I had to do to get us in a good place, which now we are in a great place, is insane. On top of a full-time job and, my own family and my own dogs and, getting the
Right.
proper people in place. So it is really hard. And I do have so many people ask me, Sarah, how did you start this 501c3? What can I do? And I'm really honest with them. I don't want to sugarcoat it because it's not easy, and the laws are tough and the taxes are tough and everything is really hard. And there's a lot going against not-for-profits, unfortunately.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, we are now, we started in February 2016. So just celebrated 6 years, which is amazing. Yeah.
My son was born that month. So, yep, 6 years. Because I remember being in a robe postpartum and looking at the post.
Oh.
Like, they would cheer me up because
Yeah.
having a kid is no joke. And I was like, oh my God, I need dogs in my life.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah. 6 years. And, I have no regrets. I really don't have any regrets. I just think if I were to go back and knowing now what I know, I might not have done the same thing. And I, here's the thing. Here's the biggest thing. And a lot of what I talk to my accountant about and, my staff is that it was a passion at first, So like all I wanted to do is help people. But then when you come through the accounting and the taxes and audits, we bring in so much, which is amazing that we get an audit every year. But I'm so thankful for an audit because people can see where every penny goes, so every penny coming in and where it goes. So the transparency, we have a platinum seal of approval from GuideStar, which means so much to me because it tells you that, your money is going to the right place. I've recently added staff members that are paid. They're, again, a non-for-profit issue is that people aren't paid properly for what they do, and it's because you want the money to go to your cause. And I totally get that. But adding staff and letting staff know how much I value them and what they do and how important they are is a huge thing. And does it take away from some of the animals? Yes, but it also makes us better as a team and better in the long run. So, you know, I think for some people, it's hard to understand, okay, how is a non-for-profit paying staff? We're business, you know? And once I learned to run it like a business, we became better.
I agree with you 100%. I've learned that on this journey because as a person who is just donating here and there or wanting to know where does my money go, I learned why as long as a licensed organization is transparent, I kind of want them to have a staff because that means there is somebody working for the animals and somebody there to help people with animals 24/7. And when it's volunteer only, which I've also been helpful to organizations who are only volunteer, sometimes there are emergencies. And guess what? There is no one. And that emergency is left there until someone can get to it because there are only volunteers, 2, 3, 5 volunteers available. It's the middle of the night. Whereas organizations like yours, or when you have even 1, 2 people that are paid staff, 3, it's so helpful. And I want my money. If people are going to give up their lives and spend their day in and day out doing something to help the animals, yes, I will donate so that my money goes to them because they deserve it. To me, they're helping us, right?
Right, right. And it's just, you know, things like a fundraising director, like, but also takes things off my plate where I'm able to help more people, you know, whether the other thing about the foundation is it's not just, we're not just handing out grants and money and having events. Like a lot of it's emotional, you know, a lot of it is people asking for advice or like, you know, what did you do at this point? And, you know, we don't take that for granted. You know, we know that if somebody's reaching out to us and taking the time, they want to hear from us. And I answer personally, I answer every email, you know, that comes in through our website or to me or on Facebook.
Oh, that's wonderful,
or on Instagram.
Sarah.
Yeah, I want people to know like we're accessible and we're not just, you know, this place that just pays bills. I think that's so important too.
Right, because people come to you, you know, with their vulnerability, you know, with their heart on their sleeve, basically,
yeah.
You know, their babies, and especially the topic that you deal with, it's heavy.
Yeah.
So
yes,
that's a really nice support to have from a rescue. That doesn't, it's not everyone can't do that. Some people even apply to adopt dogs at some rescues and never hear back.
Right.
So there's always this hesitancy of like, should I even write to them? What if they never see my email? So the fact that at Live Like Rue, you will get a response, it's everything.
Yeah, so important. It's so important to me. And it's something I preach to the staff, you know, because they all have individual emails. So I say, you've got to check it every other day for me, you know, so important.
Great. And you are based in Chicago, but you help nationally. So that's a wonderful thing for me. I love that you are just a unique organization in my eyes, not only for the kind of help that you give out, but that you're willing and able to extend it nationally. Your website says you're not a rescue, but you're a charitable licensed organization, and you offer a specific type of help for families in need, which is helping families who have had dogs with a cancer diagnosis. So walk us through the steps of how a family can get the help, and they can be anywhere in the United States.
Yeah, and actually we are worldwide. So if somebody applies from overseas, we can help them with their medical bills. I can't send cancer care packages over there because it would break our bank, which I really wish that I could find somebody, you know, in Europe, because we do have somebody in Canada actually that helps with care packages, which is so nice because, you know, we have a huge Canadian following. But yeah, so we are able to donate for people overseas. You know, obviously there's an exchange rate and all that. PayPal takes care of all that, which is nice. But basically, you just go to our website and there's an application. And I have a medical team, basically, of two people that are on staff that go through. And to be honest with you, right now, we're backed up. So we're still looking at applications from November and December.
Okay.
So it's really hard because I think the biggest thing that I want people to know is that, you know, even though we're a few months behind, we look at every application. So as long as the people okay. send in their estimates on their bills and, you know, everything is in order with what we ask, we look at every one of them. So I don't want people to think that they applied in December and that we won't get to it. We will. And, you know, what is sad about that and is the reality about that is that, you know, a lot of times the people lose their dogs. And it's not because they didn't get our funding necessarily. It's just that we're so behind. But also, a lot of the cancer treatments and things that you need are immediate needs. So, you know, donations obviously are huge for us, because the more we have, the more people we can help. And, we hope that at some point we'll be caught up, so that if somebody applied yesterday and they need to start chemo next week, you know, we can do that. We do look at applications too that are just coming in. If it's anything involved with a rescue, we will always help. If it's a foster, we will always help. So if the dog is in a shelter, I also will commit to them. So what I ask for is, you know, a reputable rescue. They've got to have their Department of Ag license, depending on, you know, what state it's in. They have to have their 501c3, which is obvious if you're a rescue. So the board kind of approves things that are rescue based, but our priority always will be rescue and shelters and fosters, because that's where Rue came from. So, and we know that those other charities and not-for-profits need us as much as individuals, but obviously, you know, we've helped a lot of people in the past. So that's kind of, you know, the reality of it is sad that, you know, we're backed up that much. And I will tell you, you know, when we reach out to people and we say, hey, we're going to be able to pay this bill or give you $1,500, and the dog has passed away or the dog has healed, they're still so happy despite what may have happened, you know. And that makes me happy, but it also still upsets me that we can't kind of get caught up and get our feet under us with the applications. But the reality is there's a lot more applications than what's being donated. And, you know, especially during the pandemic, it's kind of shocking that we made it through. I have no idea. We do a lot of in-person events in Chicagoland. We make a lot of money from them. I think in 2019, I think we did something like 83 events. You know, some of those were smaller events, but that's, you know, more than one a week, you know, so it's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And, you know, a cancer diagnosis is not cheap. I mean, vet bills as they are for simple things, for maintenance, can already run into the, you know, $1,000, $2,000. So with cancer, obviously, each bill is a lot for each family. Do you depend solely on the donations that your following gives you, that people send in? I mean, that's a huge part of it, right?
Yeah. So I will tell you, Facebook donate button has saved us the past 2 years. It's the only way we got through, that and our monthly donors. So we have, I think, over 500 monthly donors, you know, ranging from $5 to $500. It's incredible. And I can't tell people how important and how much I appreciate a $10 a month donation. So what seems like not a lot to you adds up when five people do that every month. And, you know, again, I can't state enough how thankful I am to monthly donors, because they keep us afloat. They really do. And the Facebook is hit or miss. You know, we were doing live, you know, happy hours with my friend Eric, who actually passed away not long ago, after doing all these happy hours, and had a heart attack at 38, I think he was. Yeah. So,
I think I saw a post on your feed. He sang beautifully,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah.
And he played the guitar.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So
I was very moved by that.
Yeah. So together, in just over a year, we raised something like $48,000 together. So he kept us afloat. And, you know, we split that money with him, because he lost gigs, he lost weddings, you know, he lost everything he did during the pandemic as well. So it ended up being a great partnership. And again, to be honest with you, if we didn't have him during that time and our monthly donors, I don't think we make it out of the pandemic. So I'm so grateful. But yeah, I mean, our followers and our donors, you know, I will sometimes post a fundraiser for a certain dog where I know, like, we'll be able to update them through the chemo, and or if it's a rescue dog, to kind of, you know, follow the story of the dog going from the shelter to being adopted. People really latch on to that. But yeah, I can't stress enough how incredibly thankful I am to our donors, because we couldn't do any of this without them. And, you know, there might be like a long wait list, but the people that we've helped and the amount of people that we've helped is incredible, and says so much about how people give to us and what they give to us. I really appreciate it.
That's really great. And, you know, you're right, as you're saying that $5 or $10, sometimes I because I want to donate to five different places. You know, I'm like, oh, well, what do I do? And sometimes I do that. I go, okay, what if I just send, you know, there's this $5 Fridays or $2 Tuesdays. And so I do a little bit to each of them. And I end up reading posts saying that it makes a big difference even when you send a really small amount. So to my listeners, you know, if you feel like every now and then, it doesn't even have to be monthly, you have five extra bucks or you decided not to get a latte that day, maybe you want to send it to Live Like Rue Foundation because it will make a big difference. It adds up, right?
It really does. I can't tell you how much it adds up to because it's an insane amount every month that we end up with because of the monthly donors. And, you know, it just means that we can help more animals. The other thing I should note is we don't just help dogs. I know a lot of people just think about dogs, but we help dogs, cats. We actually are helping a horse right now. We've helped a ferret, a rabbit, a hamster. It's a guinea pig. I mean, so, you know, all of these animals
really
can get cancer. Yeah. And we get like the occasional, oh, that money should go to people. Guys, we have this foundation for a reason. It's for animals. So go if you want to go help a cancer human organization, you can go and do that. So
definitely. And there's plenty of them.
Plenty. Yes.
Yeah. So let's, you know, we have to have them for the animals for sure. And let me just take you on a broader perspective, because I have been to Chicago Animal Care and Control. I went there a couple times in 2016. And it was always full, and even if it's well managed, and they're really willing to work with rescues and, you know, what is your opinion in 2022 of the canine condition in Chicago, in Illinois, and in your surrounding shelters? Where are we at? Are we making headway?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is there's a lot of people working on, you know, getting rid of these puppy mill stores. So a lot of them around here are closing. So that's going to help. The biggest problem that we have right now is now that people are going back to work and everybody adopted pets during this pandemic. So the shelters are filling up with surrenders. And, you know, a lot of my rescue friends are making pleas like, we need fosters. Like, you know, not only are the shelters getting returned, but all of these rescues who did so much amazing work in 2020 and, you know, into 2021 are now getting inundated with returns. So the shelter's packed. You're exactly right. And I, you know, it wasn't packed in 2020 because there was such a need for people that wanted to adopt that they were able to empty them out. I mean, there was a point when I think it was like half capacity or a quarter capacity, but yeah, I mean, a city run shelter is not the best case scenario. There's, you know, and I used to volunteer there and work in the back. So I would evaluate animals for rescues and kind of say, okay, this one is not cat friendly or is cat friendly. This one will chomp on your hand if you put your hand near the bowl. They're also starving and stressed. So really a tough place to evaluate dogs. But yeah, it's crazy because it's almost like a roller coaster. You know, management changes a lot. And because of politics and it being city run, it depends on who the mayor is, how much attention it gets paid. And right now, it's not getting a lot of attention. So the fact that it is packed and we have, you know, kind of a community wanting to return dogs or not able to keep a dog because of the apartment. And, you know, we have here in Chicago a great program called CRISP, which is Chicagoland Rescue Intervention Support Program. There we go.
Yes. You know what? Actually, you had mentioned One Tail at a Time, and they were my guests last season on the podcast.
Awesome.
And they brought up CRISP. So it's so wonderful to see the collaboration.
Yeah.
Because the more, I mean, we need more hands on deck, obviously. So,
yeah.
But yeah, remind us, tell us about CRISP for any listeners who have not heard about it.
Yeah. So it's, and it kind of took actually some cues from LA because they had done something similar where they have actually rescue groups, some volunteers from rescue groups kind of sit at animal control. And as animals are coming in as a surrender by their owner, we try to help them. So, you know, if it was something in Ruth's case where the owner, the biggest thing is not judging people. That's going to be hard. And it was really hard for me. You know, when I first started volunteering there, I would be so angry at people surrendering their animal. And you don't know the people, you know, you don't know them. Jackie, I think you have experience.
It's hard to understand. And I know this is only audio, but if my listeners could see me now, I'm like, you know, rubbing my forehead and like pumping my fists in the air. But it's just so hard because I can't think of a situation where I wouldn't try everything possible to not have to give up my dogs because they are my children. They just happen to be canines. So I know we have to not judge, but yes, tell us, what are some of the ways in which you have to take off the judgment eyes mm-hmm. and put on the I'm going to help you keep your pet eyes? Does it work, and does it actually change people's minds about surrendering their dogs?
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, it's really hard to sit there and listen to somebody or watch how they treat their dog, and then you try to help them. And, you know, that there's been times when I've lost it because I'm not okay with, you know, hitting the animal with a leash. Like, at that point, we're going to try to take the dog, you know. You know, you'll hear stories, you know, maybe they just had a child. That's, a lot of it is like, had a child or moved and now they can't allow the dog. So we've also worked with landlords and said, hey, like, this family is a great dog owner, a great cat owner, whatever. They really want to keep this animal. Can we give you a $500 deposit? So, you know, if it's something where in their lease, they can say $500 deposit paid, you know, by Chris for the dog. Like, those are things where if it's a housing thing, we can easily help if the landlord will work with us. Do they want to usually?
Okay.
No, unfortunately, they don't care. They don't want their apartment ripped up, you know? So really, really difficult circumstances. We've had people crying, like literally crying on my shoulder at Crisp, where it was simple. Like, they just needed some medical, got them into the medical facility that we partner with, and bam, you know, they get to keep the dog.
Wow.
So a lot of times, you know, where the shelter's located on the south side of Chicago isn't the best area. They don't have a lot of knowledge about where to go if you need help with your dog. Animal care and control, they're going to think that that's a medical facility where we can help your animal. And unfortunately, a lot of people show up there thinking, oh, I'm going to go get vetting for my dog. And a lot of times, you know, that can't happen. So they just get turned away. So we are there then to help them with that. And, you know, a lot of times, even the low cost clinics, they can't afford that. You know, they have other expenses or they lost their job. So, you know, something as simple as a spay, neuter, you know, just simple vetting, like we always are willing to cover that. And then, you know, there's the bad part of it where people don't want help. They just want to get rid of the dog. So they're going to surrender no matter what you say, no matter what you do. And that's just the way it is. But the amount of animals that we were able to get out of that situation of being surrendered is amazing. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, I'm not part of Crisp anymore just because I don't have time with my full-time job in Rue, but they will still send me people that message them about having a bump or a lump or an actual cancer diagnosis. I just had one who we paid a $3,500 bill for a CT scan of a dog that came in through there that had a mass in the mouth. And Dr. Robbins, who we work with at a vet partner, called me and he said, Sarah, it's not good. I get a lot of the bad phone calls, and then I also have to make a lot of the bad phone calls, which is a whole nother part of this, which I know we'll probably get into, but it's a lot of sadness, unfortunately, unlike rescue, which is also a lot of stress, but a lot of good things happen. So, but the tumor, the mass was actually wrapped around the dog's eyeball as well as the jaw. So trying to get those clean margins, you know, was not going to be possible. And then chemo on top of that with a 10-year-old dog. And the owner was actually Spanish speaking. So I used one of my friends who actually volunteered with us at Crisp because of that language barrier a lot on the south side of Chicago. She's such an asset. But the owner was so upset, but so thankful that they could even get that diagnosis, because the dog could have been sitting there in pain for months and they wouldn't know. They wouldn't know what was going on minus this mass that is actually, you know, really debilitating to the dog because it's around the eye socket and the jaw and the mouth and everything. So the other thing that we do is we offer, you know, photo shoots and bucket list nights like Rue had. So, you know, I'm in touch with the owner about possibly doing a family photo shoot for them. But again, that's something that's a great example of, you know, number one, we diverted an animal from animal control. We partnered with One Tail at a Time and their Pet Mutual Aid program, which is kind of all of Crisp put together. And the owner was able to get answers, you know, via our vet and didn't have to pay that huge bill, you know, just for answers. I mean, that didn't even solve really anything as far as the cancer goes. It just gave us answers. But, you know, an owner like that is somebody that has my heart, because, you know, they've kind of been through it, obviously, and tried to find answers and kept, you know, stumbling. And we were finally able to help. And she's so grateful. You know, there's a language barrier, but the translation, it doesn't get lost. You know, it's all there, how thankful she is. So,
yeah. And you can tell, you know, when people care. And you're right. I mean, I think the hardest part for me on this side of the conversation is when you're literally face to face with someone trying to help them and they're refusing the help. I'll tell you just a short story. I volunteered at a spay neuter event last week here in Los Angeles. And I volunteered because they needed Spanish speaking volunteers, and Spanish is my first language. So I'm trying to explain to families, you know, a lot of them had puppies. So they were there also for free vaccinations, microchips, food. It was a really cool event put together by several organizations. When it comes to talking to them about spay and neuter, they're literally families standing there telling me, no, we are going to breed our dogs. We want puppies. And you try to tell them, you know, well, here's what you're looking at if that does happen. Here's what you can prevent. You can prevent cancers, mammary tumors. You know, the moms suffer a lot having the puppies sometimes. It's not easy and it's costly. And they stand and they're like, yep, no thanks, not interested. And there's something inside me. It's like my blood boils.
Totally.
So I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh, this organization is offering you free spay neuter, which is, you know, easily a $600-$700 bill per dog. And they're saying no. And then later, when the puppies are born and the mom is sick or they don't have money and they have parvo because they had no money for vaccines, then they come to the organization and they're like, hey, can you help us out with thousands of dollars? That's the part where I feel there is a disconnect for those people who are not in animal rescue and advocacy. For those of you who may be listening or know people, friends, family, coworkers, who you know are not savvy in this topic, but if you have a heart, if you have compassion or just a self-awareness, just know that this is why these organizations push to help people. They're not telling you what to do. They're just saying, let us help you prevent a problem and let us make our communities better and safer with these services. And then, you know, those of us on this side, when people refuse, we just have to, like you said, right, focus on the ones that are accepting the help.
Yeah, so true. I couldn't have said it better than you. And it is really hard sometimes to keep your cool. And, you know, I've had volunteers that have gone off and I have to rein them in, you know, because we are guests, you know, at the city shelter, which is, you know, there's a lot of rules. We get fingerprinted for that role. You know, there's a lot of politics, like I said, in that. So the last thing we want to do is lose that ability to help people, which, again, is so important. I can't even imagine how many animals have been diverted because of the programs and the rescues that have actually helped instead of, again, and it, you know, I think it took a lot of us growing up and maturing to realize, like, hey, instead of pointing fingers and saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Like, let's listen, let's talk to them. Let's not, you know, say like, you're wrong, because we don't know what those people are going through. And I think it is really hard and it does take some time to step back and say, okay, instead of judging, I'm going to listen to this human being that's in front of me that is not, you know, the devil for trying to. And honestly, a lot of times, most of the times that people actually do surrender, the animal's going to be better off in the shelter than with them in their car or, you know, trying to find a place to live or living in not a great house, you know. So when you kind of realize that and get that to click, again, it takes a while for people to see that. You have a better relationship with people that are surrendering, in my opinion.
Right, right. And I've learned that, you know, just me, just as an individual, I'm like, okay, I need to understand why they just don't have enough information about this. And, you know, the organization leader for the event last week, she said to me, you know what, it's okay. They'll come around. Let's give them the vaccinations today and the microchip, and we'll stay in touch. And we'll just revisit the idea of spay neuter. Maybe this is the first time it's been presented to them. So it's too shocking. It's too much to think of a surgery when they are holding their puppy in their hand. And I mean, we're not going to do it right there and then.
Right.
They schedule it for the right time. But sometimes people don't know that. So I've had to just learn to go, okay, I'm going to just shut my mouth right now and take a deep breath. You know, one of the things that's been put into perspective now because of what is happening in the world today and in Ukraine is when I hear that a couple is giving up their dog in the United States to a city shelter because they're having a baby, that is one of the excuses I can barely tolerate. I literally have to step back and just, I have no comment almost, right? Because I would go off on the person and I probably shouldn't. But, yeah. You know, I had a baby. I had three dogs. We took in a foster dog when my son was 4 months. It's just juggling a schedule. It's just a timely thing. I get it if it's financial, but, you know, there are ways to plan ahead because you have 9 months before a child is born and you can plan ahead for your current dog. But there are people in Ukraine traveling with German shepherds on their shoulders, carrying dogs with children with suitcases across a country that is being bombed, and they will not leave their dog behind. When I see that, and then I see that in our society and that in our country, we are so disposable and that we think these services should be there for us to dump our dogs, that's not okay. That's when people need to look in the mirror and go, what kind of a person am I? Why am I doing this?
Right.
And I'm really putting that out there because as nice and as understanding as we try to be and as helpful as you and your foundation and everyone working at CRISP and the animal shelter tries to be, the human on the other side needs to take like a little reality check. You know, what kind of human being are you? Especially if you're a couple bringing a child into the world, what are you teaching that child that you got rid of your dog because you didn't have time or it was too stressful or you didn't have, you know, whatever it was you didn't have, it can be fixed and prevented. Mm-hmm. There's enough help out there.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't mean to, you know, be negative, but, you know, I feel like we have to let people know that because look at your foundation and what you guys are doing. You're helping families who have dogs that they love so much that during a cancer diagnosis, they are willing to reach out and raise funds and ask for help. So that's the kind of human beings, it's in us to be that way, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, there are some people that just give up, you know, and those people that actually look for help, like Live Like Rue or like CRISP, or, you know, there's my pet is my family. My pit bull is my family. My friend Shannon runs that, where she literally has a guidebook of pet friendly, you know, landlords and housing all over the United States, you know, where,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, where she can, and we've kind of like pinged her sometimes and said, hey, we have a landlord issue. They're in Minnesota. I think she's based in Minneapolis. Can you kind of help? But she's built this database and, you know, actually helps people. But there's also, you know, parenting classes that involve your dog, you know, so that you bring in, and I'm sure Jackie might have done this, where you bring in the car seat and the dog can sniff it and they're supposed to be able to get used to a child. I don't have kids, so I don't know. But there are so many of these resources to help the dog, you know, be okay with the child being there if that's the worry. You know, you never know what exactly is the concern with that. But there's so many resources. And I think some people just throw up their hands and say, it's too stressful to have everything. You know, you can't have the child and the dog. And it's not how it should be because a pet should be for life, right?
Absolutely. You know, we shouldn't give up, especially when we're getting ready to raise a child. It's like, you know, we passed that on. I was given a great tip. So for any parents out there who are going to have babies and you love your dogs and you're going to keep your dogs, obviously, I was told to go on YouTube and find videos of crying babies and just play them in the house. So we would play a lot of crying videos when I was pregnant. And I would leave them in the baby's room, in the dining room, in the kitchen, so that it was just, and my dogs just kind of became numb to that sound, these crying baby videos. And the whole point was that once the baby was in the home crying, my dogs didn't think it was anything else. It was just part of, it was like having the TV on. So it really helped. My dogs never had an issue. If anything, they would just be near his door or near his bedroom, kind of alerting me like, hey, he's crying. But there was never an issue. And I have pity mixes. I have 5 pity mixes that are rescues and 1 pug.
Aww.
So, at the time we had 4 pity mixes and a pug, and we have a 5th one now that came in when Atlas was 2.
Aww.
But they're wonderful. They're our best friends. They are a love, and he loves them. And so there are ways to work things out, you know, and that's why I'm so passionate. And I get so serious sometimes because I'm like, come on, guys,
right.
If I can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah.
Believe me, I grew up not liking dogs. I grew up being afraid of dogs. I was bit by a German Shepherd as a kid, and I've shared that story in my documentary and in this podcast. I didn't go near a dog until my early 20s.
Wow.
I didn't like them. So I'm the last person, if you know me well, or those that know me well are like, really? You have a podcast about dogs? You did a document? What? Like, it was crazy, you know, because I was the most anti-dog person only because I was afraid of mm-hmm. them. So I would just stay away, right? But it takes that one dog to change your life. It was a fawn pug.
Aww.
And she opened up my eyes to how friendly and harmless dogs can be. And then it was that first pity Great Dane that I found and had to rehome and couldn't find her home. And I was like, well, she's staying here.
I love that.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, I love that.
So if I can do it, believe me, anyone out there can.
That's awesome. I love it.
And on that note, I want to hear a story about a family and a feel-good story about a dog and family that you have helped and that Live Like Rue helped thrive and come out the other side. Maybe a cancer diagnosis that was possibly cured or allowed the dog to live longer.
Yeah. So there's an amazing story. And it's hard because there's so many stories I want to share. But there was a dog that I actually named Wonton at Chicago Animal Care and Control when I was volunteering there. And this was before Rue. So this was probably a good 2 years before Rue when I was, you know, helping the rescues in the back pavilions. And she was just the most incredible fawn pity with like huge ears. And a rescue called New Leash on Life in Chicago ended up taking her. I think you always have favorites when you volunteer at a shelter, you know, the ones that you always remember that, you know, were there for 4 months and you finally got out. She was there probably a few weeks, but this amazing family adopted her and she got cancer. And I was absolutely crushed. Like, I saved her once. Now it's, you know, the ball's in my court to try to save her again. And that pressure of, and it's not even like a money thing, you know, because I wasn't worried about that. I just wanted to do whatever I could for this family that was, you know, they had 2 or 3 kids and all like smitten with her. And, you know, when you have kids and you have a sick dog, it's really hard, you know, especially a family so attached. So she went through chemo and a few surgeries to remove some masses and was cured for a while, like years. So we actually did extend her, but then it came back near the end. Again, it's not the best story, but the family was just so thankful to not have all of those bills and all those chemo bills. And like I said, like there's certain dogs that I'm committed to for life. You know, a lot of them that I helped to save from animal control, I feel that way, like that I will always have their back and I stay in touch with the owners. You know, I'm almost become like a stalker sometimes because I'll check in on them because I care so much. And to be honest, most of the owners are fine with it. You know, they always will be give me feedback and let me know. But Wonton, who ended up being Wally, I think was the name that they gave her. She was so loved and the family was so thankful and just, you know, they did a photo shoot. So it was a huge deal. I gave her extra toys because she loved squeaky toys. So through our Booker Fund, which is our bucket list fund, we gave her everything she wanted. But it's really difficult to save a dog once from a shelter, an open admission shelter, and then have them get sick. And all I want to do ever is like try to help them and save them. So extending her life, even those few years, I know it meant so much to them and meant a lot to me.
Oh, yeah.
But,
and years. That's great.
Yeah. But losing her was when I got the text, I was just like, oh, this breaks my heart. But yeah, she lived a great life. So that was one of my favorite stories of a family that we helped. You know, I not only helped her one time, but again.
And, you know, I wanted to, since just to keep up with what is going on today with some of the stories, there is a story I want to ask you about. And then if our listeners hear this episode and want to go check it out or donate to this doggy, there is a husky doggy who got some sort of cancerous tumor in its nose. And I saw why the dad, I call them pet parents, I don't say pet owner, so I call you know, the doggy's dad, was pleading or there was something. Tell us the story, just because I know I made a small donation and it was small, but
you.
I felt so moved by this story and the fact that he loves his dog so much that not being able to help her financially would have not just been bad for the dog, but broken his heart. And I thought, I really believe this person would do anything for their dog and finances are keeping him from that. And then you posted about it.
Yeah. And that's the sad reality is there are times when funds, you know, keep people from helping their dog. And that's why we're here. But Rich and Gracie have, so Rich is the character in himself. He was basically made for TV. He's an actor in LA, actually California.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So the story actually is really incredible. I'm shocked it hasn't gone viral or gone on the Dodo, and it still could. But he had gotten her when she was a puppy. She was abused. So she's only a few years old. But Rich and her were in a pretty bad car accident. She was fine. He actually ended up disabled. So he now is in a wheelchair, which has prevented him from acting and doing work, unfortunately.
Okay.
So that was one of the problems. And it was a drunk driver that hit them. So when I heard that part of the story, which he put in his application, I was like, well, I'm already in tears, you know. It doesn't take a lot to break me, but like a story like that, it's just, you know, it's really, really hard just taking that. So she started to get this mass on her snout, and it's pretty much like now it's really big and there's like some growths in her mouth. But what's happening with the growths is they're now almost, it's hard to describe, but they're bleeding, which is good, which means the cancer is coming out of her nose. So her vet is very remarkable and is you know, kind of taking Rich through all of this. They were doing chemo. I think they still are. So we basically paid $5,000 of his bills and then have a separate donation page on our livelikeguru.org or facebook.com page where people can either donate right to him. Some people feel better about donating right to the person, which I totally understand. So we will post personal fundraisers or Venmos after we check them out. I should note that, like, we check out everything that we post before we post it.
Of course.
And people also have the option of calling their vet directly. So whatever animal we're helping, they can call the vet directly. A lot of the bills that we do pay go straight to the vet. So, you know, if we are paying a person directly, a dog owner, or animal owner directly, we have all that documentation. So that's all part of the application. So there's nothing... and my accountant is so good, Tiffany, she triple checks everything. So when we go to our audit, everything's there.
Good.
But yeah, his story really touched our heart. You know, he applied a while ago, actually, because this diagnosis started in December. So, you know, Gracie's hanging on. He's gotten a lot of negative feedback because of just the way she looks, which is not, you've seen it, Jackie. She doesn't look great. She's got a huge mass on her nose,
I know.
You know, which is again, wrapped around. And Rich knows that he's going to know with the help of his doctor when it's time, you know, if they say this isn't working, you know. But yeah, he's a great example of somebody that we want to help. He's rescued all of his huskies. You know, he took her out of a really bad situation where he was being abused, and he's given us a lot of thanks on his social media, on his YouTube page. And we appreciate it. He's offered voiceover work, and because he's an actor,
aww,
you know, we'll probably take him up on that. But yeah, an incredible story. And just the visuals of seeing, you know, a gorgeous husky with this mass is enough, I think, that people are kind of like, what is going on here? And like I said, he's gotten some negative comments, which he keeps it positive, which I give him mad respect for that, because it's not easy when you have people judging you about how you're treating your own animal that you know about the best.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, cancer is a beast and it moves quickly sometimes. Depends on what it is. It depends on the dog. There's so many variables, you know. So when it comes to that, yeah, we can't judge. I mean, he's already trying to do the best possible to cure this dog and to save her or prolong her life. And we have, yeah, sadly, we have no control over the beast of that is cancer.
Yeah, you know? Unfortunately.
So, but... thank you. Thank you for everything you do. What are some of the ways, if people don't want to make, say, a donation straight to just the foundation because they want to do it to a specific dog, or can they send a donation for an actual care package to go to a family? What are some of the creative ways that people can be giving donations but be more informed on what it's for?
Yeah. So when you go to our website, you'll see that you can donate to different programs. So if you want to do the Booker Fund, that's basically for bucket list items. We do photo shoots. A lot of photographers donate their time. As many of you know, like, photography is an art. So these artists are giving back their time and their money, which we so appreciate. But it's become a big thing. Like, we have photographers that are all in on these photo shoots because they want to be part of something bigger than them. I mean, it's really special when you get those keepsakes. And one of my biggest regrets is that I don't have a lot of pictures of Rue because I was kind of like focused on him at that time. So that's one thing that we do. So if you ever want to contribute to that, it goes to hotel stays or a steak dinner, you know, if it's a hospice situation. We have Serenities, which is for euthanasia. So during the pandemic, what we did is a lot of in-home euthanasia because vets weren't allowing people to be with their animals, which is, oh, that breaks my heart thinking about that.
Yeah, I did see a lot of that.
So Serenity's Wish is basically for euthanasia. We get whatever they want, paw prints, ashes. You know, obviously the in-home euthanasia is an option still. So, and that's obviously really expensive. And then we have a wish list, an Amazon wish list. So you can literally go and buy a toy for our care package. And what people love is when I post a picture of a care package and they see something they purchased there or the blanket that they made. So if you're local, we do tie every blanket that goes into a care package. It's hand-tied fleece blanket that we get from Joanne. A lot of those are donated. So yeah, so there's so many ways.
Cool.
And then the last way is show up to an event, have a beer with me, you know, come to our, we have a bake-off coming up. We have a dog prom in June. So the easiest way is just to come be social, you know, and have some drinks. And that totally supports us too. So yeah, we're so thankful for every penny.
Awesome. Oh, that's really cool. So tell us where our listeners can find and follow Live Like Rue Foundation.
Yes. Yeah, so our website, livelikerue.org, and then on Facebook and Instagram, Live Like Rue Foundation. We have TikTok too, where we have new group of followers, which is nice because we're reaching a younger audience. So we're Live Like Rue Foundation on TikTok as well.
Okay, great. And I will have those live links in the show notes for this episode so anyone can easily scroll down and connect with Live Like Rue Foundation. Sarah, I know you have a team of deeply dedicated animal lovers and advocates, so I want to give a personal shout out to the Live Like Rue team who is making a big and positive difference in the world. Please don't ever stop. Even if you take a break, come back.
Thank you, Jackie.
We never want volunteers to take a break, you know, but everybody needs it. We all have to have self-care, step away, take a vacation, regroup, travel, and come back to the cause because there's a lot of work to do still in our country and in the world, but I am very moved and inspired by the work that people like you do, Sarah, by foundations, by what I see you guys put out. It keeps me going as an individual, and it keeps me knowing that I will always adopt and rescue and help whenever I can. Our listeners should also know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any one organization or individual on this podcast. I choose to interview guests from organizations that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America, and in this case, around the world. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Jackie. It's been an honor.
Yes.
I really loved this conversation. It means a lot to me to have this kind of platform, and I appreciate everything you do.
All right, and we will keep cheering for Rue and supporting Live Like Rue Foundation. Thank you. Everything about what Sarah and her team at Live Like Rue Foundation do is positive. The only thing that sucks is cancer. And that's putting it nicely. If you visit their website and click under Shop, you will find that there are quite a few items with a very strong message for cancer. And I encourage each and every one of you to go buy something. Their rescue merchandise pieces are a great conversation starter and a good way to get the word out about the foundation and its mission. There might be someone out there who needs the help and who could really use the information about where to apply or how to receive a care package for their pet. I hope you are as moved and encouraged as I am to know that even through difficult times with our beloved pets, there are amazing people out there doing incredible work to help other humans and their canine companions. You can be on the giving or receiving end of this great cause. And no matter what you do, don't forget to live like Rue. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell all of your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes.
The canine condition. Come, sit, stay.